All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Tuesday, June 19th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
Doug Norrie's friend James.
Oh, hey, buddy. From DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. For short, as always, go and grab that free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at LineupLab.com. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings MLB. We're still steadily working on our PGA projections. So if you go into the members-only chat room, I've been posting lineups that you can run for the U.S. Open last week and then Travelers this week. So go check that out because the members-only chat is included as well. All covered under one subscription package. Free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after, and you're all good to go. Buddy, good weekend. You want to grade it how your weekend went, or you just want to move on?
Well, I'm going to go with an A+.
Whoa.
A+ weekend. Yeah, got some new plants in around the patio.
Still with
the
garden.
So that was pretty insane. Yeah, back on the gardening tip yet another weekend, two weekends in a row. So put in some agastache, some echinacea. You know the drill, dude. I don't need to tell you, but for all the listeners out there, great time of year to be gardening. Hopefully you're getting your gardens in.
I lost my wallet for another 36-hour period, so this makes for the long-running
15.
History of, I did it for this year. This is my longest one of these year where I just can't find my wallet for like multiple days in a row. It was under the pillow on one of the chairs.
Did you report it stolen this time?
No, only because I've been down this road so many times that I knew it probably wasn't stolen. my first couple rides of the wallet was lost merry-go-round, I have called and canceled everything and just like was convinced it was stolen, convinced someone just pickpocketed me, and then... You know, you do this once or twice a year for the last 10 years. You kind of learn to think.
You were staying in my house with just me and my kids. You're casting us all suspicious looks before it was caught between two pizza boxes in the recycling area. Is that like there's like a little fairy that follows you around and misplaces your wallet?
Oh, weird. Yeah, I've lost it in couches. I've lost it in pizza boxes. Lost it on filing cabinets. It's kind of a where's where of where you can lose this wallet. Anyway, it's found. We're all good to go. Got a pretty big MLB slate today. Some definitely ace level pitchers going. Might be tough on DraftKings to slot two of them together. Like for instance, yesterday we were very close to getting like the Cole and Bauer stack of just very expensive pitchers. It kind of pivoted at the last second away from Bauer into Cole. So whoopsie daisies. But we'll talk about some of those guys that are going today. Definitely some relevant hitters parks to target here, especially considering there's a game in Coors with the Mets and the Rockies. So a lot to get into on what looks to be a pretty full day of baseball. I mean, the top two guys, obviously, for pitching right now are Verlander and Sale, of the guys that are pitching today, obviously. Do you have a feeling one way or the other? I can kind of see where our projection system is leaning. I'm actually a little surprised about where it's going. I don't know if we want to talk about whether we agree on that or just if there's a guy that you are leaning to between these two. They're basically the same price on both sites. Verlander might be just a tick more expensive than Sale, but it's very close. Yes, he's 600 more on DraftKings and only 100 more on FanDuel. Do you have a gut feeling one way or the other about these two guys?
Yeah, so right now it's leaning towards Verlander on FanDuel, and I think it makes sense, frankly. I mean, the matchup and the money line, well, the money line's part of the matchup, but so first of all, where the win really matters, Verlander -243 favorite, as opposed to Sale being just a -173 favorite. And also, you know, Minnesota, just sort of a league average matchup, really nothing to write home about. And on the flip side, you got the Rays. Now, the Rays, they are a better matchup. Well, they're a tougher matchup than they have been in the past, but I still think a slightly better matchup overall than facing the Twins. So I think it's really... most of it comes down, I think, to the money line.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is just kind of made up in the slight difference between the Rays and the Twins. Because I'll say that our projection system right now, too, basically sees Verlander and Sale. And I guess this is like the big question for you. It basically sees them as the same pitcher. And I don't know if you think that's fair. I'm pretty hesitant to go ahead and call them that. I've got my own reservations. I would still lean Sale in terms of just overall pitching ability, but I'm curious to know what you think.
No, I agree. I think Sale is better. I think Verlander, it's easy to look at the 1.6 ERA this year and think that he has... Because he was basically in the low threes ERA-wise for the last 4 years in a row. He's essentially the same pitcher outside of the 2015 year with the Tigers where he probably was pitching injured for part of it and the K's really dropped off a cliff. And then over the last 3 years between the Tigers and Astros, he's been right around low 10s K per nine. Walks, kind of been fluctuating back and forth. But really he's basically the same guy he's been, except that he's run ridiculously hot on BABIP against, which is only .212 right now, with an 87% left on base percentage. So combining those, and those two things are a lot of times tied together because the BABIP, the balls get finding their way through an infield will just allow more runners to score, like over over a larger sample size. So a lot of times you will see ERAs tied to both those numbers in conjunction because they kind of play off each other. Now, I think Sale, this is why I'm actually a little surprised, actually, because I know our system has Sale as a much better just raw pitcher. I'm surprised, and I to the point where I'm kind of wondering what's going on, because the difference in money line really shouldn't be this big of a difference in their overall projection. So right now, Verlander, we have him for 48.67 FanDuel points and Sale for 44.61. So a full 10% or 11% difference. That to me feels way too much and not explained only by the money line. So I think that, you know, when we're off the podcast today and as we really start to audit this thing, this will be something I look at, because I'm just not, does that make sense? I'm just not totally buying it, because I know exactly what the raw numbers are, and that money line and the implied runs against difference is not good enough for me to have Verlander be 10% better.
Well, the other reason I think it's pulling out Verlander is the innings pitched. I mean, he's gone a few more innings per start, or not a few more innings. He's has a few more innings than Sale, in spite of the fact that they've pitched the same number of starts. I think it might also be having a difficult time trying to parse what Verlander's true home run to fly ball ratio is, because, I mean, the guy only generates ground balls on 28% of the balls in play that come off him, which is like, I've just never seen a number that low, frankly. And the fact that only 6% of those are turning into home runs probably means Verlander's running pretty hot in the home runs category as well. And all of that converging back, like, I think what our system is probably having difficulty realizing is that, like, he's pretty likely to regress in all of those areas.
Yes.
And our system is going to be cautious when it comes to regressing, because, you know, obviously, like, generally speaking, a guy does something over the course of 100 innings, it's somewhat statistically significant, but just somebody can be the guy who runs the hottest in every category, right? And so even though Verlander has historically really depressed home runs, like, basically he just gives up a very little hard contact, and that's why his BABIP winds up being so low and why he doesn't give up home runs as much. Like, it's very rare the guy that can keep a BABIP in the 270s while also not giving up a lot of home runs, because you depress BABIP by giving up fly balls, but fly balls turn into home runs. So yeah, I think Verlander's just a very unique pitcher. It's very hard to figure out what exactly to make of him. I'm with you though, like, just looking at both of these guys, I have a hard time believing that he should be projected for more raw points in Sale, but I guess we'll just have to look more closely at it. Right now, I would say either is still very cash game playable. I think it's probably very close either way, but it's going to warrant more investigation on our part.
The other thing too is that, I mean, I was kind of, I was a little bit wrong about the difference in implied runs. So right now, Sale has 20% more implied runs against him right now. So he has 3.3 implied runs and Verlander has 2.7. That 20% does make a difference too, just in overall, in what you're going, in just applying the negative points, or, you know, the implied negative points that a pitcher would get. So, you know, you can look at both the run lines and say, oh, 3.3 and 2.7, they're both low. Yeah, they are, but that's a, by percentage, that's a pretty big difference. Now, I do not think that pairing them together on DraftKings is going to be the thing that happens for us. I can see the case for doing it, because when you just have so clearly the two best guys, and the standard deviation for pitching is just so much lower than it is for hitting, that a lot of times does just make sense, I think, mathematically, to, if as long as you can get anybody in terms of bats, I think it does make sense to try to pair these guys together. I'm not sure the math is going to completely work, simply because there are so many bad pitchers going today that fading all of the offenses in plus EV spots is going to be something that you also don't want to do. So if we did not pair them together for somewhere around 50% of our overall salary cap, where do you see us pivoting? It's wanting right now to draw out some cheaper low end arms. It does not feels like maybe some of the inputs on some of these guys are maybe incorrect, or maybe just some of the run lines are so high elsewhere. Are there maybe mid tier or lower tier arms that you could see targeting that you wouldn't want to totally die in cash games on? Because, like, right now I'm looking at guys like Sal Romano and Dan Straley. I don't think we're going to end up there, but are there other guys in that lower tier that are maybe drawn out for you?
Yeah, so I mean, so first on the inputs, I actually do think the inputs are probably pretty solid on those guys. It's just that our system, when it's just generating lineups, it doesn't care about volatility at all. So it looks like a guy like, say, Jaime Garcia, and it's like, hey, he'll get you five innings. He's been striking 8.5 guys per nine. Like, what do you want? The guy's $4,000 or whatever, right? So it looks at that, and I think that's kind of what it's trying to figure out. I think for cash game purposes, that's not really a viable strategy. And I'll explain why for a second. I mean, I think people, generally speaking, sort of understand why we want more safety for cash games, but I think putting a pin in it will really help for some percentage of our audience. the reason for this, why you can't just go stars and scrubs at pitcher in cash games, is that sure, like even on average, or if you average things out over the course of six starts, Jaime Garcia winds up being a totally reasonable play. You just don't get the average of those performances, right? Like you get the games where he scores 22 fantasy points and the games where he scores negative five. And sure, over the course of six of them, maybe you get two excellent starts, two totally average, and two completely horrible starts. But you can, by targeting guys that are a little bit more expensive, you can turn that more into like four pretty average starts and two good starts, which for cash game purposes is going to yield more cash game wins over that time period. And I think for guys like Garcia, Sal Romano, Dan Straley, generally speaking, it just doesn't make sense to try to stick your neck out that way unless like the matchup is exceptional, unless there's some other extenuating circumstance that has their price very low, like say they're returning from injury, but you have good intuition that they're still going to go deep into the game or whatever. And so, yeah, for me, I'm not going to be hoping to go super cheap at starting pitcher too. I guess the big question though is, who do you pair in if you don't go super cheap? The one guy our system kind of likes right now is Domingo German, who's still pretty cheap at 7,300. He's had electric strikeout stuff this season with 10.6 Ks per nine. He's been limiting the walks more than he has in the past at just 3.5. He's still got his own issues though, right? He gives up a lot of home runs. You know, the wildness is in his pedigree. He can just go off the rails on you. The nice thing is he does have a pretty good money line today against Seattle, but, you know, pitching in Yankee Stadium is never the best spot for a starting pitcher too. Does he get clear that bar of, you know, sort of non-terrible fill-in pitchers for you, or do you want to even go a cut safer than him?
No, I really like him. He's got 19 strikeouts in his last 12 innings with only two walks. Now, that was against the Mets and the Rays, so take that for what it's worth. Sure. Those are two of the, I mean, the Mets especially, and then the Rays are just a middling offense, all things considered. The Mets are very, very bad. I like where he's going. It's kind of been this working him out of the bullpen thing has... It seems to be working, and I think the fact that they keep extending him, he's gone six innings or more in all three of his last starts. And again, like in that's 18 innings. It's going to be 19 innings with only four walks. So I think the walks are actually whatever's happening for him as a starter is just allowing him to live just in and around the zone a little more. I really like him. I think that he definitely fits right around that bill. So when I'm looking at DraftKings starting pitcher two guys, or even starting pitcher one, when they're coming cheap in that 7,000 range, I really need a guy that just strikes guys out, because the way to mitigate some of your downside, like for the guys we mentioned before, like, so for instance, Paul Blackburn, he's facing the Padres today. The Padres are obviously terrible. Paul Blackburn strikes out less than four guys per nine. Like kind of doesn't matter what his price is. So at 5,000 for him, I get that he has a bad offense he's facing against. There's just no upside at all. And there's no ways for him. There's very few ways for a guy like him to get out of trouble if he's in trouble. So German doesn't fall into that category for me. The strikeouts there.
Blackburn will be consistently bad for you, right? If Garcia will have some good starts, Blackburn just won't have any. They'll all be like just sort of terrible.
Exactly. So, and I just don't think that the price, I mean, German did have some run bad. It had a couple blow up games since he's been a starter. 7,300 for me is just too cheap. And I get that he's got the short porch and right, which is a problem. I mean, you know, at this point, Seattle doesn't have a ton of lefty power bats that really concern you all that much. You know, Cano's out of the lineup. And they just don't have a ton of other guys that are scary in that way. So I think I probably where we end up is somewhere like German. There are a couple other guys that I think are worth mentioning. The fact that he's going to come cheaper than all the guys that I'm going to mention after this really, really helps him as well. So like if you take Jameson Taillon, he's pitching in Pittsburgh, which is a nice place to pitch, gets a Milwaukee team that really will strike out a lot. But like for him, he's more expensive. The money line's worse. And the strikeouts are worse. So, like, he might have more pedigree, and he's been around longer, and maybe we know more about him, and I can see people kind of going that way because for all the things I just mentioned, and yet to me, almost in every statistical way, except for the park, Taillon seems worse. So I just don't think I'm going to end up spending more for me that for guys that just look worse.
Well, what about Vince Velasquez? I mean, he's very similar to German, except I would argue a degree at least safer than German. He's got more Ks per nine, fewer walks per nine. Kind of had more, flashed his pedigree a couple seasons ago in 2016. He had almost this exact same stat line that he maintained throughout the course of the whole season. He's interesting because he kind of runs the inverse to Justin Verlander, where he shouldn't be giving up, theoretically, as many home runs as he is. His home run to fly ball ratio is very high. But now we're on 275 innings in the majors of him sustaining this home run to fly ball ratio. And that's going to make you know, like we point to XFIP a lot as kind of a marker to use to try to indicate future performance. It's certainly not perfect. But with guys like Velasquez and Verlander, I think it becomes even less perfect because XFIP, I just don't think they've ever gone back and tried to evaluate why some pitchers are just not going to give up as many home runs as others and why some are just going to give up more when it comes to fly balls. Like XFIP assumes that all fly balls are created equally. And I mean, even a casual baseball fan would be able to tell you that that's not the case. Still, though, I think Velasquez, National League opponent in the Cardinals, almost touching 11 Ks per nine. He certainly got that K upside like you talk about. The big question is it worth paying the extra $1,300 on a day where you're almost certainly going to pay up at pitcher one? And I think that's where our system, it's funny, our system actually, that's how you get Chris Sale if you go away from Verlander. Then the next lineup has Velasquez and Sale as a 1-2 punch, and that might actually wind up being where things kind of come out in the wash when it's all said and done.
Yeah, last night Pivetta for the Phillies was something like, he was like 30% start in cash games, which I found a little surprising because he's another guy that just has some blow up games in him, but he's got electric stuff when he really turns it on. He's a guy that we've always liked to, for a lot of times this season, have liked to just be better than maybe he was coming in as a salary. And I wonder if people...
Better than Pivetta.
I wonder if people talk themselves into Velasquez for the same way, because the Cardinals have actually just been kind of sneaky bad this year. They're 21st against righties this year. They're 21st in the majors in WOBA. They strike out 23% of the time. I personally did not, our system realizes it. I did not realize that like the Cardinals had been just a bottom third offense in the season. So, I think there's definitely a case, and I'm just not sure paying an extra, I don't know, $1,300 is worth it on a night that, like I said, we are going to want to roster up some expensive bats. So, yeah, I think all those guys tie on. In order for me, it would probably go, when I'm factoring everything together, including price and numbers and everything, I'd probably go Herman, Velasquez, then Taillon. And then there's probably, after that, there's just definitely a drop-off. I'm not seeing, like, I don't want to spend 10-8 for Mike Clevinger. I think that's just a road that you don't really want to go down. Some of these other arms that are sometimes interesting are just in bad matchups, or their season numbers, like Luke Weaver, have just not been that good. Blake Snell, he gets to face Houston, so no thanks. Berrios against Boston, kind of no thanks. So, like, I think a lot of these other guys just fall into this category of, they have other circumstances that are driving them out of the conversation. And I think I would rank the guys in that. The three that I put up there probably are going to be the ones that I end up considering when we actually get close to lineup lock. All right, hit us up with a sponsor. We'll get onto some of these bats.
All right, man, let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go and play salary cap games like you're used to, but without having to run up against all those sharks putting in hundreds of lineups. We really recommend Fantasy Factor for all of our players and users that put in, say, between $5 and $100 per night. Just a good casual level of competition where you can make some money and start getting your feet wet or correct a losing streak or what have you. So check them out, fantasyfactor.com. They'll be running those salary cap games and also really other fun games like the Progressive Home Run Derby contest. They run free rolls throughout the summer, and I will be firing up all sorts of cool contests for the fall too. fantasyfactor.com.
All right, obviously we talked about it before, but there is a game in Coors today, and whenever that's the case and you have pitchers like the ones that they have going in this game, you are going to get implied run lines creeping toward 12. I don't think it's 12 right now. Not 11.5. We'll see where it goes. These run lines have been all over the place, especially with Coors. It can get bet up and bet down significantly, even right leading into the game, as like just weather conditions change or sharper money kind of buys in at the back end. But right now, the Rockies at 6.5 implied runs. It's about as high as you're going to see a baseball team really on any day in any condition. You almost never press towards 7. Only the most rare of occasions. So when we see a run line this high, you know, I don't know, a run and a half higher than just about anybody else on the slate, how incentivized are we to get bats in there? Because if you're paying up for Verlander and Sale, either or, it gets awfully tough, even though the Rockies have such a great matchup against Jason Vargas.
Yeah, so I think on a normal day, you would probably feel pretty pressured to play this game. I think today, though, given how many just terrible pitchers are going, and the fact that obviously you get the price correction for Coors, but you don't really get price corrections for other bad pitchers, it's kind of like a weird thing that the sites have adopted. Because, you know, let's take you back in the Wayback Machine for a second. 5 years ago, the sites wouldn't even price correct for Coors. So you'd be sitting there and be like, okay, I guess I'll just play the away team in Coors every single night. They finally started correcting for a couple of things, but they still don't really correct well enough for if you're facing Paul Blackburn or whatever, right? Now, we're probably not going to play Padres today regardless, but for that reason, you have other guys not in quite as good a spot as facing Jason Vargas and his 2 home runs per nine in Coors, but still in plenty good spots at half the price. And so I think you're probably not going to wind up playing quite as much Coors as you picture when you see a run line like this, at least on FanDuel, where the prices are somewhat out of control. Now, if you get a Chris Iannetta lurking towards the middle of the lineup, maybe you run him. Maybe you can run an Ian Desmond or something, especially on DraftKings, where he's a little bit less expensive relative to the opportunity. But yeah, I don't see this as like a four Rockies stack night by any means.
No, I just don't think you can get the salaries in almost no matter what happens. Now, the one guy, obviously, that is always a very tough fade in a situation like this is Arenado.
Oh, baby. Lefty like this? Yikes.
That's what I mean. Like, this guy has been, I believe he's, over the last two seasons, has the best OPS against lefty pitching in baseball. If he's not number one, he's in the top two. I'm just wondering how good he's been, like, in the last couple days since I last looked at this. So, sure. He's a guy that you really want to put in. He's an elite bat. Like, he's one of these like guys that would be a good hitter even if he didn't get to play all of his games in Coors. You really can't say that about all these guys. But he is one that for sure is just a real guy who also happens to play in Colorado for half his home game. So if he's one, he's 5,000 on FanDuel. If there was one guy I was going to try to break the bank on, and it's going to be difficult because that price is so high, especially when you're looking at the price in some of these pitching, it definitely would be Verlander. Because, yeah, but Vargas, I mean, I get that he's striking out over 8 Ks per guys per nine this season. That's been trending the wrong direction. He still walks 3.5. There's a reason the Rockies are projected for this many runs. Now, you mentioned some of the other teams. And by the way, I think you can make a case for some of these Mets going the other way. Their run line is not as high, but Herman Vasquez is also just like not a very high K arm. And with some of these Mets bats, they have actually not gone crazy price correcting because they've been so bad. Like the Mets, the Mets are walking in here having been so bad that like, oh, we did price correct. It's because these guys were all mid 2000s guys, and we've just bumped them up a little bit more. But now they're just mid 3,000 guys for supposedly the guys who are going to sit in the middle of the lineup. So Jay Bruce got scratched last night. He's only 3,100. If he were to be back in the lineup, I think that price is reasonable. Conforto, I'm a very much a pro Conforto guy. I think he's just been a little unlucky. He takes a ton of walks. I think that it's going to turn around for him at some point. He's a guy, he's in the middle of the lineup. He's only 3,500. So I think that with the Mets, you are getting lucky in that the Mets are never going to have an implied run line at more than five, except for this exact situation going in the course. They've just been so bad this year that I think you can probably consider some of them in cash games because they tried to bump them, but they just were bumping them off, them being terrible. Walk us through some of the other bad pitchers on the slate, because you're right, there's a bunch of them today.
Yeah, there are a pile. I will say, by the way, I did a quick check on our optimal lineups while you were chatting there for a second. Our thing was picking up on Johan Camargo based on the fact that he had been batting towards the top of the order recently. Yeah. He's been batting 7th and 8th recently, so adjusting for that actually does get you Arenado in the lineup, so that's good in the old sanity check department there, because it will be nice to see that name in there. Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. When I was looking at trying to figure out what pitchers I wanted to stack against today, I was just kept looking. Basically, you just sort by price on DraftKings 2, starting pitcher 2s, and all the guys at our system was like, I don't know, you want to try a little Dan Straley? And then you're like, hold on, has Dan Straley been? No, he's been actually just completely terrible. So I'll run through the list of some of these guys and give you a brief case against them. Dan Straley, the first guy that comes to mind. This season, he's running the unenviable pair of striking out fewer than 8, walking more than 4.5, and allowing almost 2 home runs per 9. So if you want to compile that all together, that means every other inning he's walking someone, and every 4.5 innings he's giving up a home run. Oftentimes that's going to happen in conjunction with one another. And so if you want to go ahead and run some Giants, I know the Giants, they have those old people, righties going. They're not necessarily a team that you think of, especially in San Francisco in terms of stacks, but in terms of just like an offbeat stack that not a lot of people are going to be on, I actually think that they're somewhat interesting. I think there's actually, I don't know, for cash game purposes, you're not going to run some of these, but for big tournaments, when you have pitchers as bad as Straley or as bad as Blackburn, who you mentioned before, even against teams like San Diego that are really, really bad hitting teams, even those teams will have big games occasionally. And Blackburn's another guy. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this. Now he's on, I'm serious, 66 innings of 3.5 Ks per 9.
Yeah.
That literally is like the guy who throws the home run derby pitches. Like, he'll generate about as many swings and misses as Paul Blackburn. And right, I've never seen anything
foul
like
he'll get a couple foul balls and then, like, just randomly.
Yeah, and then the guy gets caught looking or whatever because he gets distracted. Like, that's going to happen from time to time. And this season, it hasn't worked out as well. Like, last season, there was I mean, not among the serious analytical community, but against, like, you know, among fans and stuff. Like, Blackburn just gets outs, man. Like, I would hear this from our chat sometimes. How can we stack against Blackburn? Like, the guy's got a 3-2 ERA. Well, so far this season, an 11 ERA. So, yeah, I'll happily stack against Paul Blackburn for big tournaments, even with a team as bad as San Diego. So, obviously, just another guy to keep an eye on for the future. Yeah, so those are kind of two, I think, interesting big tournament stacks that you might not like for cash. But there's, I mean, there's infinity cash game stacks as well. Do you want to throw some out, or do you want me to keep going?
No, I got it. So I'm looking at places that really aren't price corrected, even though their ballparks play up for big power. Like, we've talked about this in the past. So obviously, yeah. Coors plays exceptionally well. You know, standard deviation's higher than anything else, just because it's just so crazy. But other parks, like, for instance, Cincinnati, play great for power as well, but you don't get any price corrections when guys play there, especially even their home guys. Now, that's why you'll see maybe slightly higher rate stats for some of these guys over the course of a season, not like the Joey Votto types who are elite, but just some of the other guys that are in the lineup, so that when you get a guy like Matthew Boyd or Matt Boyd going in and facing them in Great American, you just get nice prices on a lot of these guys. So you get, you know, Suarez, who should hit middle of the lineup, hits lefties very well. Duvall, who I don't like at all, but he's still coming cheap and has a lot of power. And whenever mm-hmm. you are facing, this is like the exact kind of guy that you want Duvall to face, just kind of a lower K guy, just a little bit on the wild side. I do not think Duvall is a very good player, but if he's going to hit around the middle of the lineup here, sometimes they move Peraza up to near the top of the lineup when they face lefties. All these guys are coming very cheap against Matt Boyd, who is just bad, right? 7 Ks per nine, more than 3 walks per nine. I know the ERA is low. The XFIP is at 5. This guy sucks. And I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised to actually see this run line. Right now it's in the high fours, like 4.7. I wouldn't be surprised to see this creeping toward 5 as maybe some late money gets into it, because...
Yeah, it's funny, man. Dude, we've been saying this about Matt Boyd starts, like, for 4 starts in a row. And I mean, obviously the ERA is still pretty low, but, like, this has to burst, right? Like, he can't possibly sustain... Like, just last season, had these exact peripherals and a 5.27 ERA and a 5x FIP. Like, I just don't see it. I don't understand it even the littlest bit.
Well, this is why baseball is so tilting, too, because I've watched every single one of his starts, or followed along with them, because I've stacked against them just about every single time. And it just, you're right, it just hasn't been working out. And I'm totally fine doing it again, because I just know, we've just seen infinity examples of... Yeah. Over large sample sizes, that these guys just end up becoming the guy they were. And this guy, all of his numbers point to him being worse than last year. So if you look at the 5.27 ERA from last year and think that he's improved, all of the metrics you want to look at are except for BABIP, which he's running 100 points lower than last year, and his left on base, where he's running 10% higher. That's the only two things that he's improved on, and those are not improvable skills. So yeah, no, I'm all over the Cincinnati Reds today, and they're a team that I usually wait to have their lineup come out, because they will do just enough switching around to keep some of those value guys pretty cheap, because they just haven't hit toward the top of the lineup for a lot of parts of the season. Who else before we get out of here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so there's a couple of somewhat expensive teams that you can consider stacking against or stacking today. The Nationals are up. That's my dog. He's chiming in. He's excited as well.
Oh, this guy's a podcast regular at this point, because I know we got a lot of them on Friday. We got a little bit of them on Wednesday.
I don't know. The rest of the family has one. The one thing I ask throughout the day is just a little bit of peace and quiet from the hours of 9 to about 10:30. And some days you get it, some days you don't. So today is not one of those days. Anyways, you have the Nationals and their considerable cadre of left-handed bats going up against David Hess. David Hess is simply terrible. He's like a slightly better Paul Blackburn, basically, sub 5 Ks per 9. He has 3.3 walks per 9 and just gives up so many fly balls that he's at a 2.2 home runs per 9 as well. So ultimately one of the most stackable pitchers in all of the major leagues. It'll be shocking to me if he makes it through the whole season enough to qualify as starting pitcher. But if he does, his 5.83 XFIP will be the worst in the league by that point. So yeah, the Nationals in a terrific spot today. You know, again, so a lot of the guys you're going to want there, Murphy, Harper, they're going to be really expensive. So maybe you don't ultimately get there. But, you know, if you decide to go cheap at pitching, they're a team you can absolutely target. The Yankees are up against Marco Gonzalez. We talked about, you said Cincinnati, right, as a park that doesn't get enough credit for being a great hitter's park. Yankee Stadium can be this way, too. Now, Marco Gonzalez is not as bad as I kind of thought he would be based on his earlier stints when he first came up, like in 2014. But still nothing exceptional, and still nothing the Yankees shouldn't be able to take advantage of. You know, he gives up a lot of hard contact. His BABIP is high, but his BABIP's always been high. So that's another team. I don't even know that I would feel safe for cash games. Like, I can actually see the Yankees kind of fading out here. But especially if you want to stack some of those right-handed bats, I think they could be an interesting spot too.
I like lefties against, I like stacking Yankees against lefties who do not K a lot of guys, because that's the biggest problem for Judge and Stanton in the middle of the lineup. Exactly. They just strike out so much, like, you know, 30, 35% of the time or whatever. Now, they're both, Judge is more platoon neutral, but Stanton is clearly much, much better for his career against lefties. This is, and under 8Ks per nine is right around that threshold of where I will start paying attention to Yankees guys, especially in stacks, because if you can't get the ball past those two guys, you're dead as a lefty, and especially against Stanton. Like, you can't, if you can't dial something up to get a lot of swings and misses off his bats, he will just, almost no one in the game will punish you like he can. So I really like that.
And then, yeah, I mean, Gonzalez doesn't quite pass that test, right? Like 7.8 Ks per nine. It's not like we're talking about Paul Blackburn or David Hess or one of these other guys, but yeah, it's still not quite good enough to where, and that's what I mean, it's like not quite over the threshold for me for cash, but for big tournaments, expect to see a lot of ownership on those guys.
And I'll just go back to the Nationals real quick. For some reason, there's no line in that game. It might be because they were trying to decide on the Baltimore pitcher. I expect that's what's driving the projection.
I think it's the Nationals pitcher that was undecided, right? Because the Orioles are pitching David Hess.
Oh, right. Sorry, yeah. The national side of the game is undecided, so that's driving those projections down a little bit, because we do model some of that off of the Vegas line, and when that's not there, it defaults to low. So if you're looking at our system this morning, you see it's low. That's why those guys are going to jump up a lot when they come in, probably higher, much higher than five. I would say more than five implied runs is an easy place to start. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/MLB. Get you that free 3-day trial of our projection system. We'll be back again Wednesday, but we will be taking next week off from podcasting as we'll both be away. So enjoy the podcast for the rest of this week as we will take the following week off. DFSR.com/MLB. Go check it out. Buddy, talk to you again tomorrow.
Talk to you soon.